Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again. Unbelievable! Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake. A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's fact, I'm the best, you know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe it myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Welcome back to episode 178 of the Last Round Podcast. Thank you again for joining us. Jumping straight into it for this week, fight reviews. This past Friday, the 20th of May, from the White Sands Event Center in Plant City, Florida, on ProBox TV, that new app that I think just came out maybe within the last couple months or maybe in the last month or so. I've been seeing some stuff online about it. ProBox TV, John Pascal gets the 12-round unanimous decision win over Fanlong Meng, who takes the first professional loss of his career. Meng was down in round 9 in this unanimous decision loss to Pascal. Do we count this win for Pascal? Is this legitimate, or is this just trying to maybe get some ring rust off and get another payday and see what happens? Or what's our conclusion here?
I thought he looked good. You know, I do like Pascal as a fighter. I always thought he's in, you know, pretty entertaining fights and stuff like that. So be interesting to see, you know, where he goes from here. You know, he had the drugs ban has now come back. But before the drugs ban, whether it was, you know, the drugs that he was using, you know, I'm sure they were, you know, helping him. You know, he was looking good. He's always in entertaining fights. He's still a big name. I'm sure there's plenty of fights, you know, out there for him still, just to see whether he stays on ProBox. You know, now it's pretty good app, you know, so far. You know, got a lot of names on there. Roy Jones Jr., Tava. I think it's like $2 a month, or if you just do the whole year, it's like only like $18 for the whole year if you just do that whole package. So what's that? Like a couple, two or three cups of coffee from Starbucks right there. You get yourself a year's subscription of boxing.
That's true. That's true. Do we know who's behind this ProBox TV?
Oh, no.
I don't know.
I did see it linked.
It always makes me wonder, you know, when these new things pop up all of a sudden like that, you know, where's this funding coming from, you know?
There was a name linked on Twitter one day to it, and but I didn't. It wasn't somebody that I recognized. It wasn't like a name that I knew.
Do you think that and maybe more are going to come as time progresses forward? But do you think with these social media stars like Jake Paul, Logan Paul, you know, all those guys kind of tapping into the boxing market and getting a piece of the boxing financial pie during the last couple of years, especially Jake Paul with, you know, how serious he's kind of going into it. Do you think there's outside investors in a way, or outside entities who are looking at boxing now and saying, hey, I think this is something we want to dip our toes in. Let's see what we can do. Do you think that's happening?
I think that there'll always be people who want to come in and try, but you know, in the years that me and you have been watching, people try, they come in, they make a little bit of a splash, but it's a dog-eat-dog world. You know, I think we'll always be really, we'll just have the main guys, you know, the Matchroom, the Top Ranks, the PBC, Triller may stay around a bit, but from what we hear, I think they're losing a ton of money. You know, DAZN, I think they've got little bottomless pockets from the other countries that they've already dominated. You know, they're kind of like, look like they're kind of like backfilling the amount of money that they're losing in the UK and America at the minute. But yeah, I'm sure, you know, we'll see it. You know, how we had, you know, Frank Warren started the TV channel for a period of time, and then, you know, that's kind of like died. And yeah, well, I'm sure we'll have people come and go and stuff like that. And then, you know, we'll have people coming in and laundering money like we always see. So,
Oh yeah. I definitely expect that in the world of boxing, as in the years, months and years and days ahead. You know, boxing just has that reputation, doesn't it? But we're still here. But we're still here watching, talking about it, analyzing it, breaking news and all that stuff. We're still here talking about it every week here on the last round. But yeah, that ProBox TV, I'd be interested to know who's behind it. If anybody from ProBox TV is listening to us, you're more than welcome to come on as a representative, talk about it. We can ask you some questions. Maybe our listeners want to know more about it, you know, see what's up. I'd be interested to talk to somebody from that side of I guess the broadcast, you know. That's what we should try to get somebody. I mean, I know we've gotten commentators and stuff like that, but maybe somebody from behind the scenes in a way, from a broadcaster, like a DAZN, a Showtime.
Like a Joe Markowski?
Yeah, in a way. But even him, I think he's too visible. I'm talking about somebody who maybe the hardcore boxing fan base might know, but they're not in front of the cameras, but they do everything behind the scenes. So they know the sport, they know the TV platform, they know the ins and outs of the whole system like that. I think it'd be interesting to see. Like I said, if anybody from ProBox TV is listening to us right now, reach out to us. Or we'll look into it and see if maybe we can get a representative from them to talk to, you know, let our listeners know what you guys are about. Moving on. Also this past Saturday, the 21st of May, from the O2 Arena in London, England, on DAZN, Joshua Boazzi gets the 12-round unanimous decision win over Craig Richards. This was a pretty exciting matchup back and forth. I know I picked Richards last week. Obviously, he came up on the short end of the stick here. But hey, I'm proud of his attempt to try to win. But I think this was good for both of them, but more for Boazzi, just because he has, I guess, that larger type of hype in a way behind him. And I think he needed a fight like this in a way. And I think Richards, you know, gave him something to think about. Would you want to see a rematch? What do you think?
It was an interesting fight because Boazzi had moments where he looked really good, but then he had other moments where I was like, he took parts of rounds off. Like towards the end of the fight, I don't know whether he was just conserving energy. There was rounds where, you know, he'd be teeing off on Richards and then he would just cover up. And I'm like, what is he doing? And he would just cover up and let Richards. And I'm thinking, I didn't know whether he was running out of steam or, you know, he could feel that he needed to conserve some energy because he thought, okay, this is going to go 12. I don't want to empty the tank now. It was very odd at certain parts. And Richards, unfortunately, did the same thing. I think, you know, a lot of people know that Richards does start slowly. He downloads data or whatever. And he did the same thing. And Boazzi knew it. And everyone seems to know it. All the English, you know, fans of, you know, Craig Richards and that division know that he starts slowly. And Boazzi just jumped on that and just kind of like got himself into a good lead. And then Richards kind of, you know, woke up a little bit and started coming back into the fight. But yeah, I think there's still a lot of questions about Boazzi. Good win. Good to see him fight at the British level. You know, we've been campaigning for
questions like what? What do you mean?
Just, is he at that level? Really? Like, is he a world, you know, there's still questions. I just think if he gets in with Bivol, I think he'd get beaten. Just at that level, really, still, there's still a lot of questions, like where, you know, I think he got like a bronze medal, you know, at the Olympics, and everyone was like, okay, you know, Boazzi's the guy, he's going to be the guy at that weight division. And, you know, he's been kind of quiet, you know, and hasn't really done a lot. And even now, I still think there's a lot of questions to be answered. And hopefully they stick him, you know, in a, you know, British level again, or even European level, or, you know, I don't want to see him get another gimme, you know, get him in there now. He's not, you know, it's not spring chicken. So,
you don't think Craig Richards was a good matchup for him?
No, it was, because it kind of tested him, because Craig Richards was a name, not a huge name, but he was a name, you know, the British fans knew.
And that's especially what we after wanted the Bivol fight. Yeah, especially after the Bivol fight.
Yeah, you know, because we wanted to see him in there. You know, his performance was against Bivol was pretty good. But yeah, just that part where he kept taking parts of rounds off and he was just kind of letting Richards, he'd just cover up as well. And just kind of let Richards just kind of like tee off on him. Instead of, you know, kind of like maybe skipping about, you know, moving out of range, you know, kind of, you know, moving around the ring to stay away. Very, very odd. I just didn't know what he was doing there. But, you know, still a good fight. I thought it was a good fight, and I thought the scorecards were close, which they should have been. Tony Bellew's card was atrocious. I don't know what he was watching.
I was going to ask you about that, yeah.
I think he gave every single round to Galazzi.
Do you think that some... I mean, obviously, we know. We know how it works out, but do you think... And I don't want to say I'm accusing somebody. I'm just saying from a general standpoint that commentators, especially when it's commentators like fighters turn commentators or what have you, do you think some of them will put specific scorecards forward in favor of the fighter who has the broadcaster behind them in a way, the promoter behind them, in a way to kind of help the development and the promotion of that fighter, and also to maybe secure their job as a commentator?
Yeah, without a doubt. I don't know whether they're told to or whether it's just something that they do because they know that the A-side is their fighter. You do get some that don't, like Timothy Bradley over the last year or so when he first was on ESPN, he was very like that. And then I don't know whether he realized or he read Twitter and realized that.
I think he took the criticism and I think it really affected him. And he's like, okay, fine. I'm going to go and let loose.
Yeah. And I like that. I'd rather he sat there and told the truth because, you know, there's been fights where he'd say stuff to Andre Ward and be like, what on earth are you watching? And I'm like, thank you, Tim. Like at last, you know, like we are not blind as fans. Yeah. So when they say that sort of stuff, it just makes you think, like, what on earth are you watching? Like, are you as corrupt as we think the referees are? You know, like, are you trying to convince us that my eyes are lying to me? So, you know, I do like that. And, like, I don't know whether Bellew just... And at the same time, I'm sure it's hard when they're, you know, watching somebody that maybe they're close to. You know, maybe they're friends of them. Maybe they're a sparring partner or something like that. But, no, you can say that. You know, you say, like, oh, you know, I do think Bawatsi's winning, you know, closely. And, you know, maybe I am biased. You know, just be honest with it. And we'll accept it as fans, you know, I would. So, yeah, I don't know whether they're told to or whether it's just something that they do because they think they have to keep a job on DAZN. I don't know.
Yeah. No, maybe. And when you mentioned Bradley a couple of years ago when he kind of started the ESPN gig, it pops into my head about the Pacquiao Horn fight. Or I remember that fight and Bradley was commentating that fight. And I remember he said, He agreed with it. He's like, oh, no, Horn beat him. But I immediately thought, well, would you have a different opinion if you didn't have three fights with Manny Pacquiao and you also had some controversy? Was it the first fight? I think it was the first fight that a lot of people, and I say a lot of people lightly, you know, it's more than a lot of people, believe that he didn't win. And I was one of them. Do you think that, you know, especially after that and then subsequent bouts that he commentated, maybe he felt, was it attacked or maybe he felt the criticism was valid and he's like, okay, fine, I'll give you guys the truth. And he just went for it.
Yeah. I think he must have read them and maybe he knew that he was playing into ESPN. And he was like, you know what? I'm going to be Tim Bradley. You know, I'm going to be myself. If I'm going to get hate, I may as well get hate for something that I actually believe instead of just, you know, siding on the A-side bias. Because, you know, as fans, we watch a lot of boxing and, you know, we know what we're seeing. So yeah. they don't need us. You know, like there's a lot of people now who say that sometimes they turn it off. No, they'll just watch the fight. You know, they don't listen to the commentary.
They put it on mute.
Yeah, they put it on mute because it's annoying. Or, you know, like in the UK, you used to be able to, like, if you didn't like it, you could turn it off and listen to the radio.
Who in the UK, who is the most beloved, I guess, in a way, commentator? And who is the most, do I want to say hated?
Most beloved.
Or who generally is like, oh, okay, like people... like this person or that person.
Well, I know that DAZN, obviously, when they had, you know, Costello, they stole him from the radio and he'd been a very good boxing commentator, done the Olympics, and a lot of people had always wanted him to do TV, but he'd always turned it down. And eventually, you know, it was a big thing when he joined DAZN, and he just has a very good voice for it as well. just, you know, just very like a soothing, relaxing voice. You know, I still think he's good at, you know, I don't know. Who comes out with some of the outrageous things that they say. Tony Bellew at times can come out with some outrageous things. Kyle Froch, but I sometimes think that he's just playing the character. You know, he's just playing into that. You know, I think he knows that, you know, sometimes if you say outlandish things that...
How many of the criticism, especially here in the United States with the American broadcasters, the Zone, Showtime and stuff like that, when they broadcast over here in the United States, like how many of these critics who come out when they criticize the commentators, how many of them are just doing it because they have promotional allegiances to certain sides, you know, certain sides of the street? Like how many, like sometimes I see it, I'm just like, are you just coming out just to hate just because you can, or is it justified here, you know? Because sometimes I see, I'm just like, I don't know, but it's kind of like a promotion. I think it's so interesting to see that there's even fans out there who are fans of they have promotional allegiances, you know. They do. Like, you know, you attack one fighter from one promotion and then they attack your fighter from this promotion or that promotion or this promotion, or they go out of their way to, you know, dig up stuff and stuff like that. You know, it's so crazy. It's just like, you know, we should all just be a fan of everybody. You know, if you want to criticize one promotion, then criticize them. The reason why we're criticizing, and I give a shout out to Sal, Mr. Boxing Guru on Twitter. I think he tweeted this saying that, you know, if people, not just people, but media, you know, like us, if we're spending our time criticizing you or offering you valid criticism, especially as a promotional company or even a fighter, it means that we care enough that we want to see you get better and succeed. That's why we're offering that criticism. Don't take it as hate. You know, at least from us, we want to see you get better. That's why we're kind of pointing out, do we want to say the holes, the gray areas? But it's like, you know, we're not fans of one promotion or the other here. You know, we have good favorite fighters and fighters that we think are going to be good and think are going to be great and stuff like that at all different promotions, PBC, Golden Boy, Top Rank, Match Room, you know, all over the world, you know, even Showtime with all these broadcast partners, The Zone, stuff at ESPN. Doesn't matter to us. We just want to see everybody fight. And that's the unfortunate thing about it. But, you know, it is what it is. But it's very intriguing to see, you know, fan bases kind of align themselves with one promotion or the other and then attack each other. And it's just like, what are you guys doing? Like, you know, what's going on here? Can we just all get along? But going back to Bawatsi, ideally, you as a hypothetical matchmaker for him, who's next? Who would you put him in there with? You said somebody at British level or European level, which indicates to me that you don't think he's ready for that world level yet.
He could be, you know, he could rise to the occasion when he gets in there. But, you know, I think at the minute that division is kind of tied up. You know, you got your Bivol, Beterbiev, you know, Gilberto Ramirez, Joe Smith. You know, originally, obviously, he was going to be in there with Maxim Vlasov, if we remember. And then, obviously, the injury happened and that fight was called off. So that would be a good fight. You know, he gave Joe Smith a pretty close matchup, and some people thought that Vlasov actually won that. Anthony Yard, but that's Eddie Hearn, Frank Warren, so we probably won't see that. But then you've also, you know, Callum Smith's in there. Callum Smith's ranked very highly as well. I don't see either of those guys getting a shot, you know, soon. So, you know, instead of just sitting around and waiting, fight each other.
Yeah. Or forget it. Let's bring a rematch with Craig Richards. You know, if he can't find anybody else, at least give us a rematch. Hopefully it's better than the first one. It is what it is. Moving on, also this past weekend from the Gila River Arena in Glendale, Arizona. There's a Glendale, California, but this is Glendale, Arizona. On Showtime, David Benavidez remains undefeated at 26-0 with a third-round TKO of David Lemieux. This was for the WBC interim super middleweight title. Lemieux was down in round two just before getting stopped in round three as the referee jumped in to stop the contest. I guess, you know, WBC interim, you know, I guess it should have been for that belt. I don't know. I guess this is the WBC's way to try to force a Lemieux, not a Lemieux, a Benavidez Canelo fight, see if Canelo fights Benavidez and stuff like that. Look, I like Benavidez. I think he's a great fighter. He's got a lot of talent and he's young and he's only getting better. But I need to see these guys fight each other over there on that side of the street, as they say. He needs to fight Caleb Plant. Fight Caleb Plant. Fight Jermell Charlo. Or is it Jermall Charlo? Fight them. Fight them. Just like Canelo Alvarez said, they all fight each other, and I'll fight the winner, which most likely would be David Benavidez. I think everybody knew from the beginning that Lemieux wasn't the same as he was before. Benavidez was the big favorite, but you could tell that Lemieux, he was still trying to swing for the fences. If you watched those, you know, the first couple rounds, even though he got stopped, Lemieux was still trying to find that power that he had and swing for the fences. And you can tell he was still kind of bothered when the referee jumped in and stopped the fight, like he could have continued, which I believe maybe he could have continued. But he was eventually going to get stopped, so it doesn't really matter. But for Benavidez, do we know what he said in the post-fight interview? Because I don't think I heard. Do we know?
No, but I know that online everyone keeps talking about the Plant fight. You know, they have beef from before. So, you know, why not do it? Those divisions are, you know, tied up. It's a big fight. You probably make big money. There's a story behind it. You know, and, you know, a lot of the time, you know, some of the biggest fights are those ones that have that real beef, because as fans, you can feel it. You know, you go to the press conference, you can feel it. You can see the spite when they talk to each other. You know, it's perfect for like a Showtime all access video. You know, they can dig that up. They can play on that. That's something that's going to increase the pay-per-view buys. You know, for example,
you think like that would be a pay-per-view fight? I don't think it should be, if it's going to be. I don't think that's a pay-per-view fight. Plant Benavidez? No. You think so?
It's PBC. What did we see? What did we see around Christmas? What was that pay-per-view that was like $20?
Do you think their guarantee, their fight purse guarantee, is high enough that PBC needs to put it on pay-per-view?
I think that Plant won't want to drop that much down. He's going to have to, but after you've been on that Canelo money, do you think he's going to want to come back down for six figures, like 500 grand, 700
grand. Back down. What? They're both at 168, aren't they?
No, I'm talking about money-wise.
Oh, okay.
When he's been on that Canelo purse, like he'll want at least what? At least a million or? Well,
yeah. They're for sure going to want a lot of money, especially Plant. But there's also the notion that is Plant going to go in to a dangerous fight such as Benavidez immediately after his loss to Canelo? Or does Plant want a comeback fight to kind of get back in the rhythm and get in the winning column and then explore a possible Benavidez fight? What's the outcome here?
See, I think if I was Team Benavidez, I think you go Plant, right?
I would. Well, I mean, we'll touch on it later, but Canelo's obviously busy in September.
Yeah, I mean, he's got the Triple G fight. And then he's, the rumor is, you know, what he's kind of said, you know, it's going to be Triple G and then back to Bivol.
Yeah.
So Benavidez, where else are you going to go? You know, I don't think you're going to, the biggest fight and probably the biggest paycheck is the Plant fight. And I don't know whether Benavidez are all talk, you know, for how long have they been calling him out on social media? Just Caleb Plant just not won it.
Do you think it has anything to do with like Showtime? I mean, now for the rest of the year, at least Canelo's busy with DAZN and Matchroom, but Showtime and PBC are kind of using Benavidez, Charlo, and, you know, I guess even Spence as like negotiation pieces for the Canelo sweepstakes, because obviously they did. You know, there was a report that Charlo was offered, Benavidez was offered, and even Spence at a catch weight of like 165 or something like that. So if they've, if they have and have them fight each other, Benavidez plant, Benavidez Charlo plant Charlo, that devalues their negotiation power in a potential Canelo sweepstakes next year, right?
Yeah.
So I think they're looking at it like that from a negotiation standpoint. But see, Benavidez strikes me as like that Canelo mentality. He really does. Charlo actually does too. He's just stuck between a rock and a hard place. He's kind of got that Bivol treatment. But Benavidez strikes me as like, he wants to fight the best. He wants to do it for like legacy and stuff like that. He's just had some unfortunate incidents that have stripped his title away without ever actually suffering a loss. But he's that type of guy where, in relation to Canelo, where he's like, yeah, put me, I want to fight the best and I'll show you that I'm the best, you know, like, but maybe the powers that be behind the scenes aren't letting that happen, or just, you know, for one reason or another, aren't making that happen. But obviously as Benavidez gets more power in his career, if he keeps growing his star and keeps getting more and more wins, especially in knockout fashion, then his negotiation power increases like any other fighter in that same position. But I think, yeah, I think it only makes sense. I vote the plant fight. I mean, now that Canelo's busy for the rest of the year, I'm sure Showtime and PBC are thinking about that. Like, oh, okay, well, how about plant? Let's throw plant in there, you know? Let's throw Charlo in there. Or Charlo Benavidez, anybody? Like, come on, give us something here. Give us something here. Like, imagine what a flex it would be. Imagine what a flex it would be if Benavidez went up to 175 and fought Bivol. Let me ask you this. If Dmitry Bivol says he's open to fight Benavidez, if Benavidez wants to at 175, which I'm sure he would, Bivol's just doesn't care. He'll fight anybody. Does Bivol come in as the A size, as the A side from a financial standpoint, or is it Benavidez? What are we talking about here?
I think Bivol.
That's a hard one, huh?
I think Bivol maybe just because of he's had that exposure from the Canelo fight, but does that really generate ticket money? That's the only problem. He's a more of a household name, but then when Benavidez has fought in Arizona before, the rumor was he didn't really sell out there, and that's technically his home, isn't it? But but the problem is I think Benavidez sells in California. I have guys at work that ask me about Benavidez
That's exactly what I was gonna say too. There's a lot of people who are casual boxing fans that I know who have asked me about Benavidez, like, oh, how come Canelo, because his name gets associated with Canelo, like, oh, how come Canelo doesn't fight that guy Benavidez? And it's a lot of the time I'm surprised. I'm just like, I'm surprised you guys know who that is.
It's that style, though, isn't he? He's got that very slow, stalking style. Like, he's just so big and just flat-footed, just walks you down and just pulverizes you. And that's what people want to see. So, like, you know, yeah, he is one of the people, like, you know, outside of the bigger names at my work, where people will stop me and but like, hey, what do you think of that Benavidez? Like, he's a monster, isn't he? You know,
but it's also like ESPN, like Stephen A. Smith on First Take. Obviously, they have a big reach and a big audience, and it's all casual sports fans. But he's mentioned his name before, and I think so has Max Kellerman, and you know, those mainstream sports shows when they talk about boxing and Canelo, Benavidez's name is always brought up. Especially by Stephen A. Smith, who doesn't know his boxing. But he throws his name in there. He throws Charlo. He's like, he needs to fight Charlo. He needs to fight Benavidez. And it's just like, okay, like those would be great fights.
California.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yeah, but they need to start putting Benavidez in California. I mean, I get it. Arizona, that's his hometown, home state. You know, family can come and all that. No state tax over there, so payday's a little bit better. But in terms of fighting and getting a crowd behind him, he's Mexican. He's Mexican-American. Put him in Southern California. Put him at the StubHub.
We saw the crowd from Munguia, and I would say Benavidez is...
Exactly. That's a good comparison. You know, we're going to talk about that in a couple minutes as well. But Munguia, his last fight was at...
Honda Center.
The Honda Center in Anaheim, and his next fight is going to be in the Honda Center in Anaheim. And when we went to cover that fight, there was a very good-sized crowd there for him. There was a very good-sized crowd, and we were pretty surprised. We're like, oh, wow, this is a good turnout. So I think Showtime and PBC can do that with Benavidez in California too. I think they can, and that'll build up his stock. That'll build up his stock, especially because Southern California has so much of the concentrated media in boxing, especially the YouTube media. They need to take advantage of that. Bring them over here, man. Bring them over here, and the Mexican fan base will come out. Will come out, especially because he's, like you said, he's one of those stalker fighters, and he comes out and he stops you. And that's what people like to see. So who do we see next, realistically, for him?
Oh, man.
Give us the Lemieux rematch. Come on.
Looking at the guys, you know, in the super middleweight, I'll just read them off to you. Obviously, Canelo's the number one. Jesse Hart's on number two somehow. You've got Andrade, John Ryder, Daniel Jacobs. What do you think of that?
I guess.
Then Benavidez at six, Caleb Plant at seven, Lerone Richards at eight, Carlos Gongoria at nine. And then I honestly don't know who this is. Pavel Silyagin, a Russian, who's a 10-0. Those are the top 10.
I don't know.
No, the people below that, the only names that really stand out, you're looking at Belanger, Zach Parker, Anthony Durrell. You know, does he want to pick up another belt? You know,
Is Jesse Hart still with Top Rank? Wasn't he a Top Rank fighter?
He was for a period, yeah, when he fought Ramirez.
I wonder if he's signed with anybody right now. Like one of the big promotional companies, at least. I mean, I'm sure they'll make an offer. I mean, who else is there? You know, like realistically. You know, they're not going to put him in there against Charlo at 168, even though Charlo was willing to do it for Canelo. Plant, like you said, Plant and him are the most ideal because they have that beef. They can use that in the marketing. But like you said, is Plant going to want to come into another dangerous fight against somebody like Benavidez immediately after the Canelo loss? Is that going to happen? You know? Is that, but they're not in the Canelo sweepstakes for the rest of the year, so they need to find viable opponents. They need to find them.
It's an annoying one because, in my opinion, it's one of those ones that actually makes sense. You know, they're both on PBC. There really isn't anybody else of any relevance at this time that makes more sense for them to fight. It's probably their biggest payday at the minute, and they have real beef. So, like, just make the fight, you know, like why not do it?
Yeah. I mean, we'll see. I'm telling you, Benavidez, he's a threat. He's a threat, but put him in there, man. Put him in there. Like he can go up against the killers and most likely be the favorite. Let's see it, man. Let's see it. Also on the card, your favorite and mine, Victor Vicious Ortiz returns after I don't know how long of a layoff. With the 10-round unanimous decision win over Todd Manuel. Ortiz was actually down in round 10 of the fight, even though he did get the W here. What do you think? Should we take Ortiz seriously here, or what's going on?
No, he's not going to challenge for anything, is he? He's not going to be up there and, you know, looking to win anything, any titles or anything like that at, you know, 147 or 154. You know, I'm sure he'll come back. He'll probably fight, you know, some of the elder statesmen.
And this guy, Todd Manuel, is 20 and 20 now. 20 wins, 20 losses, one draw. That's wild.
You know, last time we saw him was August 2021, where he lost to Robert Guerrero. And I expect him to, you know, just kind of have a few fights like that. You know, some of the older people in and around 147 and 154. I don't think he's going to make a run for anything. If he knocks a few wins together, you know, he may get a chance at somebody, but it'll just be for, you know, name recognition only. Watch, yeah. he'll probably get a shot at like Conor Benn or something now because he's got a
Maybe. You never know. Also, this past weekend from the Resorts World in Las Vegas, Nevada on ESPN Plus, Zanabek gets the second round KO over Danny Dignam. This was for the WBO interim middleweight title. Dignam, I believe, takes the first loss of his professional career. What'd you think about Zanabek's win?
Just one-sided, wasn't it? You know, he was just far, far too good for him. And you could see early on that it was going to be over, you know, really, really quick. But, you know, fair play to Danny Dignam, you know, flying over from the UK. And, you know, if you're a UK fighter, it's, you know, bucket list for them to come over to Vegas, see your name up in lights and, you know, main event a fight in Vegas. And, you know, he's managed to do that. And, he had a shot at the WBO interim. Just unfortunately came up against someone who's, you know, really, really, really good in Zanabek, and you know, I'm sure he'll pick up the full title, you know, eventually, and probably go on to be a pretty good force, you know, in the middleweight division.
Yeah, we will see. Also on the card, Jermaine Ortiz gets the 10-round unanimous decision win over friend of the show Jamel Herring, who takes the fourth professional loss of his career. Did he retire officially after this? I thought he retired after the last fight, and then he pops up again. I keep hearing like, oh, he was training and he had a fight schedule or something. I was like, what happened? Did he initially want to retire? And then he's like, oh, maybe I should go back.
Even he fought Shakur, you know,
yeah,
lost,
Shakur, yeah.
Lost convincingly to Shakur Stevenson. And then he went away and, you know, decided to move up a weight. You know, came back against Ortiz. And I think, you know, that was, you know, the last time he went to the well. Unfortunately, there wasn't, you know, much left in it.
Maybe it's like a contract thing. Like Top Rank was like, hey, we still have one fight on you.
I think it's one of those things where you just wonder. You're like, you know what? Is there much left? Like, you know, when that bell goes, is there, you know, is the old Jamel Herring still there? And I think it's the same as like when it happened to Ricky Hatton when he came back. You know, maybe sometimes you need to get into the ring and to see, yeah, it's gone. You know, now's the time.
Yeah.
You know, that's what happened to Jamel. And honestly, I thought, and I think you probably agree with this, and I think most people agree with this, I honestly think that Jamel Herring absolutely squeezed every ounce of what he had out of his career.
Oh, yeah.
Because I honestly do think, you know, he really did, you know, facing like Carl Frampton, going in and on, you know, when he was on the podcast, you know, going in against people for Top Rank where he was the B-side. They didn't necessarily
And he admits it too. He admits it that he was a B-side and he spoiled their plans.
Yep. And look what he did. He had those days where he had, you know, like the military.
You talk about entrances. A story. You talk about a story. Like, I bet you think there's going to be like a book written about like his life. Because I mean, like even in his personal life, he went through a lot of stuff.
Well, there isn't. He did do one recently. And to be honest with you, he should have waited a little bit.
Yeah. Now. I would have waited. Yeah.
Yeah. He should have done it now because there is one out. But yeah, I mean, fair play to him. You know, he really did. I honestly don't think he could look back on his career and have any regrets. Where there's going to be people like Broner and, you know, those guys who look at it and think, you know what, like if I didn't, you know, party as much and drink as much and do that, like
he was a world champion. He was a world champion, legitimate.
And how many people, exactly. And how many people can say that?
Yeah.
Very select few. So,
he was a legitimate world champion. Like he was.
And I mean, I don't think he's going to be lost for work. He talks really, really well. I'm sure ESPN, you know, will offer him, he'll be on some sort of gig with them, you know, doing commentary.
I think they'll test him out, see how it goes.
Yeah, I think so. He speaks really well. He's very eloquent. He's very good. Super nice guy. And, you know, congratulations to him. Yeah, definitely did very, very well in his career. And I'm sure he will now going into retirement.
Yep. Riding off the card, Adam Blue Nose Lopez gets the 16th win of his career with the 8-round unanimous decision win over William Encarnacion. Lopez still there. I think his most significant matchup, even though it was a loss, was against Valdez. He really took it to Valdez a couple of years ago. It was a good fight. I think he came on, didn't he come on our show just before that fight, or was it after that fight?
Which one?
The Valdez fight.
He came on after.
It was after, right? Yeah. Yeah. So, I think Blue Nose Lopez is still, doing his thing because he trains with Buddy McGirt, right?
Yeah, he's still training with Buddy. This was a good win for him. William Encarnacion is one of those guys that's not like a huge name, but he's skilled. You've seen him before, like on a few top rank cards where you could see I was going into this. I was kind of like, this is going to be a tricky fight for Adam. But I thought he did really well, and still some good fights in there for him. Like he kind of was like on a bit of a ride, and then he beat Louis Correa, Jason Sanchez, and then that fight against Isaac Dogbe. I honestly thought Adam won that. He lost the majority, and I do wonder if that's just because Isaac Dogbe was a bigger name, ex-world champion. Does that kind of go into the minds of the judges, and he gets like a little like. Those 50-50 rounds to decide with somebody like Isaac Dogbe. Definitely a good win and, onto bigger and better things. He's still only 26.
Yeah, he's still got a lot of time. And he's one of those guys just like, okay, if you get matched up with him, it's not going to be easy. So.
No. And he's already, 26 years old, 19 fights. He signed with a big company like Top Rank.
Hey, man, he could be like Jorge Linares, taking losses early on in his career. And then the latter part of his career, I guess, if you want to call it, is where he kind of hits his stride. You never know.
Get him in there with Gilbert Gonzalez.
That'd be fun. That'd be a fun fight. I don't be surprised if Top Rank hasn't explored that already. Don't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised about that. Joe's coming off a win. I mean, I'm sure they were hoping. Actually, I'm sorry. Yeah, Joe's coming off a win. Lopez, I guess, even though this is an 8-rounder, now he's coming off a win. Don't be surprised if we see that before the end of the year. Lopez versus Joette. I could see it. Moving on, fight previews. This upcoming Saturday, the 28th of May, from the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, New York, on Showtime pay-per-view, Gervonta Tank Davis, 26-0, goes up against Rolando Romero. This is for the WBA lightweight title at 135 pounds. Obviously, this was rescheduled from, I believe, last year. Was it last year or early on this year? Rolly Romero was initially the original opponent for Tank Davis's last fight, but then he had some troubles with the law that he got out of, I guess. No charges were filed against him. And Davis fought Isaac Cruz, who Isaac Cruz put up a great fight against him and really made a name for himself, because now Isaac Cruz's name is getting mentioned with the big boys at 135 pounds. And hey, look at it. Rolly Romero gets this, charges get dismissed. He doesn't get charged. I'm surprised. I was really surprised about that. I was really surprised that Showtime and Steven Espinoza went back and they gave him a shot. I thought for sure, I was like, oh, okay, well, he's not going to get a shot anymore. No, they waited for that to clear. And as soon as it cleared, they're like, okay, we're back. And I think even Tank Davis, because there were some tweets that he tweeted out where he was just like, man, they want me to fight this guy. And he was kind of expressing frustration with, his promotional team and all that and all this stuff. So let's see, man. Let's see. The thing is that I think a lot of people are taking Rolly Romero for granted just because, he talks kind of funny and all that stuff. And it's, he has that personality that you just kind of like, oh, who are you? But am I wrong to think that maybe there's an X factor here? Because he has trained at the Mayweather gym for years. He lives in Las Vegas and he's been a part of those, what do you call it? Those those, what do they call them, those dog fights or something, whatever they call them.
The dog pound
or whatever it is, where they just fight and fight for like 15 rounds straight or something like that. So he's been around that environment. And he said he sparred with Davis and he's seen Davis spar. And he's been around that Mayweather environment, that Mayweather boxing gym environment, which I think is good for him in fighting Tank Davis. I still think Tank Davis is the favorite, but I've been thinking about it all week. And I think that not a lot of people are thinking about that. You know, I think they're just looking at Rolly Romero as kind of like an unknown because he doesn't have the star power and the profile of like a Tank Davis or any other of the bigger lightweights with the bigger profiles. But am I wrong there? Is that a horrible analysis? What do you think?
No, I actually got really into it the other day. I watched the Showtime All Access, the first episode. And yeah, Rolly is super confident. Saying that, you know, he's seen Javonte, like, you know, from a young one, like coming through the gym, you know, when you pressurize him, he gets out the ring. I've seen him quit sparring like so many times. And the more I watched it, the more I was like, you know what? I think Rolly might do this. You know, just
they
like,
got you, huh? They got you, huh?
they do. As soon as you start seeing the buildup, like all the logical stuff that's in your brain just disappears. And I was kind of like, you know what? What happens if Rolly catches him? You know, like,
well, Rolly's a big kid. He's big kid.
For that division. Yeah, he's heavy-handed. He definitely, like, in terms of boxing technique and boxing IQ, Javonte Davis has him, like,
well, there's the difference. Yeah, and Davis has that killer instinct. Like, he's a killer, man. Like, you know, when he sees blood, he's a killer. It was rare that he didn't get like a knockout or even knocked down against Cruz. That just gives a testament to Cruz on, you know, how well prepared and how good he was for that fight. But
Cruz's defense in that fight was unbelievable.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. He was excellent. But it doesn't take away from the fact that Davis, even after that fight, like, he's still a killer. Davis is still a killer and he has that killer instinct. So that's why I think wins Davis a fight. But I think it's more intriguing than people think. Do I think it's like intriguing enough that, like, oh, you know, fight of the year, this and that, or just, you know, excellent matchup, you know, but not necessarily. But like you said, Rolly Romero's mouth markets the fight, helps to market the fight. He's confident. He sounds extremely confident. He's like, oh, I'm going to take this guy, you know, whatever. And like I said, going back to he's trained at the Mayweather gym for years. He's been a part of that environment. So maybe that helps him. Maybe that helps him in this fight. Either way, I think it's a more interesting fight than people think. I really do. And I'm really surprised Showtime went back to that well and gave him another chance. I'm really surprised, especially with Steven Espinoza, you know, how he thinks. That's interesting.
It was interesting. I think they maybe just knew that, you know, Rolly, you know, Davis sells. We know that he sells. And Rolly's got a mouth on him. So maybe they thought, you know what, this is a good combination in terms of, you know, hopefully getting pay-per-view sales. It's not a busy weekend. They've chosen a good weekend. It's the only real big fight, you know, this week. The intriguing thing is Davis going to do what he says? Is he going to fly the nest? Are we going to see him?
I don't think so. I don't think he is. It'd be great if he did, because then he... And I think he could. He's at that point in his career where he can call the shots and he can move around. I think he can. Kind of like how Mikey Garcia did it. Like, he left Top Rank, got out of that lawsuit, and then he just started working with different promotions. He went with PBC, Showtime, then he was with The Zone for a couple of them, and, you know, whatever. And obviously Canelo is the best example, but I think Davis could do that, man. And Davis can make a ton of money. And he can go fight all these other lightweights at these other sides of the street. Man, that'd be awesome if he could do that. But I just don't think it's going to happen. I think he's going to end up staying with PBC, Al Haymon, Mayweather Promotions. He's going to stay in that bubble. But man, he's one of the few guys who has the power to do that. And he would be the favorite in a lot of these fights if he crosses the street as a free agent with that negotiation power. That Yeah, man, that'd be awesome to see, because that kid can fight. He can fight regardless of what people think. He can fight. So, but we'll see. We will see. This is a Showtime pay-per-view. Obviously, I'm interested to see how it performs. Reportedly, last time against the Isaac Cruz fight in the Staples Center in LA, reportedly it didn't do too well. The only person who reported numbers was Rick Glaser. Nobody else reported, which I think is very telling that, you know, listeners and fans should notice that when you don't see reporters report numbers, does that mean they didn't get, a leak from the inside? You know, was it purposeful or what? You know, obviously we don't have any confirmation of the numbers, so, you know, we've only heard one source essentially, but we'll see. I wonder how this one turns out to be. I wonder how this one performs. You know, is it gonna crack 100,000 buys? Is it gonna do 200? I mean, what are we gonna look, what are we seeing here? What do you think?
Yeah, I think we do. I think over 2-something.
You think it does over 2-something, really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Oh,
maybe.
Quite see, a I don't weekend. It... I don't. There's no other real boxing on.
Oh, you know what? That's true. It's a holiday weekend here in the United States.
Yeah.
And there's going to be a lot of people having like get-togethers, barbecues, or parties, or whatever. And they're like, oh, there's a fight tonight. Davis is fighting. You know, that's true. I didn't think about that. I think you're right. I think from a schedule standpoint, that's going to help them. I could see that.
Memorial Day weekend for our UK.
Yeah. It's a Memorial Day weekend over here in the United States. That's true. That definitely helps. So we'll see how that goes. Also on the card, Arislandi Lara goes up against Gary Spike O'Sullivan for the WBA middleweight world title. This is an interesting matchup.
Came from
I don't know where Spike O'Sullivan came from. I remember he was like a potential for Triple G a couple of years ago. I remember seeing him at the StubHub after his name was like, you know, being mentioned a lot and marketed a lot for as a potential fight for Triple G. I remember he showed up in a suit and he has that handlebar mustache and people were like, oh, Spike. Like they were all over him. And then, you know, 15 minutes of fame is up, right? So who wins this one? Lara O'Sullivan.
Yeah, I think Lara really wins it at a canter. And if we're being honest, you know, his boxing skills, even in this late age in his career, I think Arislandi Lara, you know, should take this. It'd be a tragic defeat for him, really, if he loses to Gary O'Sullivan. You know, every time Gary O'Sullivan has stepped up to the world level, you know, he's lost, you know, Jaime Munguia, David Lemieux, Chris Eubank Jr., Billy Joe Saunders. So, I mean, good for him. How old is Spike now? Let's have a look. 37. So, yeah, it's a good...
Well, they're both around the same age, aren't they?
Lara must be about that.
Maybe a little older?
How come his age isn't on here?
Well, they're both in their late 30s for sure. But, yeah.
That's weird. Why is Spike O'Sullivan's age on his box rec, but Lara doesn't have his on there?
Because Lara's... Cuban,
right?
Lars,
he's Cuban. at least around that age, so
yeah, he's around there somewhere. So we'll see. We will see for a WBA middleweight title, huh? That's interesting. WBA, man, and WBA and their, you know, all these sanctioning bodies with their promotional ties. It happens. It really happens. Also on the card, Jesus Ramos 18-0 goes up against Luke Santa Maria 13-2-1. Ramos, I think, is a name that people are forgetting. He's there, man. He's there, and I think he's trying to make a name for himself, and they're really trying to push him forward to see what he can do, right?
Yeah, well, he's good to watch. What is it, 18 wins with 15 KOs? And you'll always see him at the fights. He's at all the fights in Vegas and stuff. He's always suited and booted.
Yeah.
When you see him there, heavy-handed, good fight, really good fight for the undercard. I think we'd have to go by Ramos by KO. Carry on that streak he's got. He's good to watch.
Yeah, definitely a fight to keep an eye on. Moving on, news and notes. Michaela Mayer versus Alicia Bumgarner is reportedly set to land sometime this upcoming summer or in the early fall. obviously this would be a cross promotional fight between Matchroom and Top Rank, right? Hey, I'm for it. You know, I like that fight. Hopefully it works. Does Bumgarner go to ESPN for this fight?
Good question. That is a good question. It looks like they may go to that. You know, it'd be awesome. It would just be a Matchroom Top Rank card, wouldn't it?
Yep.
Imagine that.
Yeah.
Every fight, Matchroom and Top Rank.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
That would be interesting. But this is a good fight, especially one that was needed for the women's division. And it really is, you know, Alicia Bumgarner, a clash of styles. Someone who's heavy-handed, doesn't throw a lot, but heavy-handed against Michaela Mayer, who's tall and really still has that amateur type of style, in my opinion. Kind of boxes from the outside, uses the reach really, really well. So it's a good fight because I think both of them are talking about moving up afterwards. And I think this is for the Undisputed, right? I think...
Is it? Isn't Bumgarner Undisputed?
I think Michaela Mayer has the WBO, and I think Alicia Bumgarner has... She has two of them, right? Like the IBF and
something like that.
Yeah, I honestly can't remember. No, it's not for the Undisputed. Just the WBA is not there. Yeah.
Also, Derek Chisora has reportedly inked a contract for a July return. No opponent yet, but he's hoping that Adam Kownacki steps in the ring with him. I don't think that happens, but.
Wait, you think Kownacki signs?
No, not against Chisora. Isn't Kownacki still signed to PBC?
I believe so, but he hasn't been doing too well.
You know PBC and especially, you know, that side, Leonard Ellerby and Al Haymon, they don't like Eddie Hearn.
Maybe he's a free agent after those recent losses.
He might be. Well, that's what I'm asking, you know.
Doing overly great, but I mean, I hope we get it. It'd be a good fight. It's better than obviously, you know, throwing Chisora in there with Wilder, like the talk was for a while.
Yeah, we will see. And also, the biggest news of the week so far, Canelo versus Triple G 3 is official for this upcoming September 17th on the second version of the Zone pay-per-view. I'm cool with it, man. I'm cool with it. I didn't think it was going to be announced or Canelo was going to make a decision this fast. I honestly thought it was going to be sometime in June, but I'm actually cool with it. Like I said, him fighting Bivol again, in a rematch, he might, you never know if he beats Triple G, especially if he knocks out Triple G, he might have that adrenaline and say, all right, I want Bivol again in December. At 175 or whatever, or him come down to me at 168 for my Undisputed. You never know. But I like this fight. I know people are just like, it's Triple G's older and stuff like that. But I think that these two are essentially made for each other. They just have those clash of styles, like maybe like a Mayweather-Pacquiao. And I mean, the unfortunate thing is that Triple G's older, but he's still got that pop. He's still dangerous enough. So we'll see. We will see, but you know, I are you surprised that Canelo took this route instead of going for the Bivol rematch immediately? Or you think the contracts are just kind of like, oh, well, you kind of have to go this route?
I think maybe because it was already kind of set in stone that, you know, that he was going to do this. And it also gives him a little bit of time to go back to the drawing board and maybe look at what didn't work well for him for the Bivol fight. You know, he can, you know, get this fight out the way and then, you know, go back to the drawing board and look at, you know, a plan B and a plan C for the Bivol rematch. Because I do think that Canelo will do it because I think that, you know, he's chasing legacy. I think he's that confident in his own ability. That he wants to do it. I don't see him being the sort of person that believes, you know what, Bivol's better than me. I don't think so. I don't think Canelo's like that.
No, right. Yeah. He's definitely, I don't think Canelo's built like that.
And yeah. I think some people are saying, you know, this is good for Triple G because it's shown that Canelo is mortal, you know, as such. You know, he can be beaten. I think it's going to be worse. I think Canelo's going to be kind of pissed that he lost. He's going to be pissed that people are now saying that he's not pound for pound.
Right.
He's going to be like, you know what?
I still think he's pound for pound, whatever people might say. I still think he's number one.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. Yeah, I don't think it's going to work too good. I think he'll get in there, and I think he'll be very, very flipping spiteful.
Oh,
I
yeah,
think,
yeah.
I think Triple G could be on the end of a bit of a beating because of the fact that Canelo's going to be like, oh, you guys are questioning me?
Yeah,
exactly. I'll show you.
Exactly. That's a good point. That's a good way to describe it. But it also gives, in a way, it gives Canelo like a way out. Maybe that's how they looked at the Bivol fight. Like, look, I'm going up to 175. I'm fighting a guy in his prime, a world champion, legitimate light heavyweight at 175 pounds, one arguably the best light heavyweight in the world. Even if I lose, I moved up a weight in a division that's not really my division, and I'm still undisputed at the division below 168, and there's still a fight there for me in Triple G. So, because I mean, you got to think about it. If Canelo fought somebody at 168, or he even fought Bivol at 168, or somebody else at 168, and he lost like he did to Bivol, it would affect his stock more and his drawing power in a third trilogy match with Triple G in September, because it was at that same weight class. And if he lost his titles, his undisputed titles and all that. But in a way, him fighting Bivol at 175 kind of takes away It takes away that blow to him in a way. He can kind of say, well, I moved up in weight to fight a guy who's arguably the best light heavyweight in the world in his prime. And he just beat me. That's it. But I'm still champion at the division below. You know, I mean, look at UFC. UFC, those guys move up and down. Look at Conor McGregor, you know, going from what, 145 all the way to 170. He has a couple losses, but he's still the biggest star in their sport. He comes back like once a year and he's still the biggest star. So, you know, I think this is applicable to Canelo too. It's the same thing. So, yeah, I mean, from a business perspective, I think the Triple G fight is biggest box office he could do. Is it going to be at T-Mobile Arena? I don't think it is. I think it's going to be at MGM.
So what we've heard so far is they were looking at doing it at like the Allegiant Stadium and also T-Mobile, but I believe
both. I don't think Allegiant Stadium is worth it for that.
Both of them had something like, I think they have like clashes or something, like something's already going on those weekends. Football maybe, and maybe like hockey or whatever.
Throw them into the MGM Grand, man.
That's probably the biggest outside of those two, right?
They'll sell it out. They'll sell it out easily. You know, I just don't think that they have the same drawing power as they did in the first two. Because in the first fight, the gate was huge. In the second fight, the gate was still huge, but it was lower.
Cracks a million buys?
No.
Oh.
No. Not this one. It won't crack a million buys. And speaking of buys for the Bivol fight, there was a narrative going around that it was like 300,000. And then Eddie Hearn responded to somebody saying, double it. It was around 600, and then people started going back and forth on their pay-per-view narratives and stuff. I thought it was pretty interesting.
I bet the Triple G Canelo trilogy will probably be the first DAZN pay-per-view for the UK customers.
No, I don't think so.
You think they'll still do that as a freebie?
I think they'll still do that as a freebie. You can't do a freaking pay-per-view at... What time do you guys have to wake up to watch it over there? Technically, like 4 in the morning?
Yeah.
5 in the morning?
4 or 5 if it's in Vegas or depending on where it is.
I don't think so. And if it is a pay-per-view, it's going to be obviously way less. Way less. But I'd be surprised if they do a pay-per-view in the UK for this fight. I really would be. You know? Because at the end of the day, you still have to subscribe. So they might get people who might subscribe, pay the subscription fee. Just to watch it. So they're still kind of getting something, but they're not getting anything close to what the United States charges in pay-per-view. But we will see. We will see. But hey, I'm not mad. I think it's still an intriguing fight, even after the loss. You know, and like I said, I still think Canelo's pound for pound. You know, as much as people might hate that, I still have him as number one. And let's see, man. Let's see it. Like you said, I agree with your your sentiment that Canelo is going to have something to prove because he's going to be criticized a lot after this Bivol loss, and he's going to be spiteful. And it might not end well for Triple G, but you never know. Triple G seems he's kind of spiteful too, and he knows, okay, this is probably my last go around against the biggest star, my last payday. I'm going to go all out. I'm going to do it. You know, there's bad blood there. There is. It's marketable. So we will see. But once again, guys, thank you again for listening to this week's episode of the Last Round Podcast. We appreciate you guys each and every week. And before we sign off, once again, Mike, go ahead and let them know where they can find us and follow us.
We are at The Last Round 12 on Instagram and Twitter. Be sure to join us next week. We'll be reviewing the Gervonta Davis, Rolando Romero, and then looking forward to Stephen Fulton against Danny Roman and also George Kambosos against Devin Haney.
The boxing schedule moves on just as the world turns. So for once again, for my co-host Michael Shepard, I'm Danny Z. This is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round Podcast.